Turn to Genesis 45, and we are basically finished our study. We've looked at the life of four key men who were the fathers, really, of the nation of Israel: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Here's what we've been seeing. We've seen that Abraham is the man of faith, Isaac is the quiet man, Jacob is the wild man, and Joseph is the faithful and forgiving man. Tonight, as we finish, we're going to look how it's going to end when Joseph dies in Egypt, and what does he tell his family? And so as we look at this, we're going to look at four big areas tonight. We're going to look at the reunion, and that's where Jacob and sees his son Joseph after 22 years. We're going to see blessings, the blessing. We're going to see forgiveness. And then we're going to see death. And so this is sort of the life of these guys. And I don't know about you, but when I study the Bible, it like is alive to me. So, I mean, I think I know these people. And when I look at it, and then like when one of them dies, it makes me sad, you know. And, you know, and so tonight we're going to see the end of all of these people and what happens there. So when we think of Joseph, we remember his faithfulness, his father, to serve his father, to serve Potiphar, to serve even the Pharaoh. And one of the keys of his life was forgiveness. That's the key. His brothers hated him. They sold him into slavery. And yet when he came to power, he forgave them, he loved them, and he protected them. We have to realize that sometimes people do us wrong, or we think they did us wrong or something, and we realize that vengeance belongs to the Lord, that we don't get people back. We forgive people as God has forgiven us. And so the four great lives. So tonight, let's talk about the reunion. So begin in Genesis 45. And as we begin there, if you remember that Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. Look at verse 5. It says, verse 4, it says, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. And they came closer, and he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." Can you imagine their thoughts when they think to themselves that the last time they saw him, they sold him as a slave to the Ishmaelites, Midianites? They haven't seen him in so long of years, and all of a sudden, he's the powerful man in Egypt, and he says, "I'm your brother. I'm the one you sold." He didn't beat around the bush. He said, "I'm the one you sold into Egypt. Now don't be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." Now here's something I think we've got to think about. He says, "Don't be angry with yourself. I forgive you. I forgive you." Why? Because here's what we see: their actions, "You sold me." They did bad. But it's God's part of this. God sent me here. And sometimes things happen and we don't like it. Something goes wrong. But we have to just trust God and realize that sometimes God allows these kind of things to come into our lives that we trust him. And we have to go on and those kind of things. And look what he goes on to say to them in verse 6. He says, "For the famine has been in the land for how long? 2 years. And there's still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting." You remember, how old is he now? Okay, it was 30 when he came to power. They've had the 7 good years. Now they've had the 2 bad years. He's how old? He's 39 years old. For those men, the last time they saw him, how old was he? 17 years old. It's been 22 years. It's beyond, you know, when you think about it, these are real lives. These are real people. And so he says, don't worry about it. Once again, he says, realize God is preserving us. And I like this. He says, "God sent me," verse 7, "God sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance." Now, we got to stop and think. The whole idea is that back in Genesis 3:15, God said there's going to be the seed of woman who's going to crush the head of the serpent. And then later on in Genesis 12, basically 1 through 3, is going to be the seed of Abraham is going to come. What if there is no seed of Abraham? What if there are no Jews? What's going to happen? Well, there's a famine coming. And if the Jewish people didn't get to Egypt and get the food, there wouldn't be any Jewish people. There wouldn't be any Messiah. If Joseph had not been sent down there ahead of them, there wouldn't be a way for somebody to protect them. And so sometimes you stop and think and you go, you know, God is working his plan. We don't always understand it. Verse 8, he says, "Now therefore it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he made me a father to Pharaoh." That means he made me the advisor to Pharaoh. "And Lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt." He says, listen, what looked bad, like you sold me off and that wasn't good, and I got put in the thing and that wasn't good, but God raised me up, and here I am now to save your lives and to save our nation. And that's in our people. And that's what he's talking about. And so then he says, here's what we need to do. We need to go and we got to tell Jacob. We got to go back and tell Jacob that I'm still alive. Verse 9, hurry up and go to my father. Say to him, thus says your son Joseph. We're going to tell him, you're alive. God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not delay. You shall live in the land of Goshen. That's the best area. You shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children and your flocks and your herds, all that you have. He says, go get dad. Tell him to come on and come to Egypt. We got to tell him. We're going to tell him to come to Egypt. And now, here's the thing I'm thinking. How are these brothers going to go back and tell their dad about that Joseph is alive? Are they going to say, well, we thought an animal ate him? Or are they going to go back and tell the truth? Well, what do you think? What would you do? I'd tell them, I think the animal ate him. We've already seen Joseph say what? No, don't worry about it. This is what God has planned. And so he says, there will be, verse 11, I will also provide for you. There's still 5 years of the famine left in you and your household, and you all would have been impoverished. You would have all died. That's what he says. Then he does something amazing, and that is he goes to Benjamin. And what was Joseph's response to Benjamin? Look at this. He says, verse 14, then he fell on his brother's neck, Benjamin, and wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck. He kissed all his brothers and wept on them. And afterwards, his brothers talked with him. You know what you're seeing there? They realize he's forgiven them, or they think so. And he said it two or three times. It wasn't you, it was God. Even though you did this, God did this. Later on, he's going to say, you meant it for evil and God meant it for good. And it's just amazing. And that's what he's saying. And all the brothers realize that he's probably not going to get him back, at least at this stage of the game. And they're thinking, wow. And so we realize that there are two responses. There's either vengeance, but we have to remember vengeance belongs to the Lord. We don't get people back. We don't go after people. It is not our responsibility when we perceive that somebody's done something wrong to us to go after them and to get them. We don't do that. Vengeance belongs to the Lord. Forgiveness is always the aspect, and forgiveness is releasing the debt, and that's what we have to do. And so here's what he says. It goes down. Go down to verse 19. Basically, it said, now you're ordered. Go take this. Take the wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. He actually tells them, look, we got wagons for you. You go all the way back, get all your stuff, and come back. Don't worry. God will provide. Now, I want you to think about Jacob. What is he thinking? The sons are gone. They haven't come back. What is he thinking possibly? He should have said, you know, I lost Joseph. I lost Simeon. I'm about to lose Benjamin. I may never see any of them again. But God will do beyond what Jacob could ever think. Now, you know, when I think about Jacob, and I'm going to erase this right here, I think about Jacob and I think of that his name means what? Tripper, deceiver. And then God changed his name to Israel, Prince of God, or one who strives with God. And you look at Jacob and you say, Jacob, you had a wild life. That's why I called him the wild man. And yet, what is God about to do for him? He's about to do, and I'm going to write it up in just a minute. He's going to do for something for Jacob beyond what we could imagine and what Jacob could imagine. And let me say it this way. Does Jacob deserve anything that God does for him? No. Let me ask you this question. Do you and me deserve anything that God does for us? No, it's all called grace. And he's going to do something else. He's going to keep on testing. Joseph is still testing his brothers. Look at verse 21. Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh. See, Pharaoh said, you go get your family. Here's wagons. Here's food. Here's everything. He gave them provisions for the journey. Now watch verse 22. To each of them he gave changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave what? 300 pieces of silver, that's a lot of money. And what? 5 changes of clothes. Woo! Well, here's some suits, here's another suit, here's a bunch of money. What are the other brothers thinking? You know what he's doing? How are they going to respond? They were jealous of him and sold him into slavery. The best he can tell at this point, they don't appear to be jealous of Benjamin. And now he's, man, you remember, he gave him all the food, and he gave Benjamin all the food, a lot more food than everybody else. He wanted to see how they would respond. And now he's given him more clothes than anything else. And look what he says to him. To his father he sent the following, that lists all the stuff. And then it says in verse 24, so he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, watch, do not quarrel on the journey. Hey, listen, you guys have got to get along. This is the past. The past is over. Go get the family. Let's make this work. Now, if you look at verse 28, it says, Israel said, because they come and they find him. By the way, they find him and they say, guess what? I love verse 26. They came to him and they said in verse 26, they said to him saying, Joseph is still alive, and indeed he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. But he was stunned. He didn't believe him. He said, you can't be, what are you? He's been gone for how many years? 22 years. You're telling me he's alive? The last thing I heard is some animal ate him up. And you're telling me he's alive and he's a ruler of Egypt? And when they told him all the words, Joseph, that he had spoken to them, and he saw the wagons, and he sent, and Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. He went, whoa. Then Israel said, it is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go down and see him before I die. You think he's about to die? I mean, he could be. He's pretty old, isn't he? We'll see. We'll see. Let's think about this. Look at the blessing. Look at this. Joseph was dead. Now he's alive. All his sons are safe. He's going to see Joseph. They got provision during the famine. The entire family is going to be together, and they're going to live in the best land in Egypt. Now, what did Jacob say the last time? I've lost Joseph. I've lost Simeon. I've lost Benjamin. Everything is against me. And now he's found Joseph. All his sons are safe. He's going to see Joseph. They're going to be able to make it during the famine. The whole family is going to be all together, and they're going to live in the best land in Egypt. God's blessings are better than we can imagine. It's always that way. It's always that way. God's blessing is always better than you can imagine. And so, I mean, it's just amazing. And so, wow. So they're getting ready to go. So now we're getting to chapter 46. We're moving along pretty good. So chapter 46, they're ready to head that way. And so look at verse 1. So Israel set out with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba. Now, what? Listen to this. I don't have the map on the thing here, but you remember that Egypt's down here, and way down south is Beersheba. And if you remember, at one time, Jacob had come there and had worshipped there. And watch what he's going to do as he leaves. Look what it says. So Israel set out with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba. And what did he do there? What did he do? He worshipped. He offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Now, why? What's going on? He's come to Beersheba. Why did Israel stop and they headed to Egypt? Because why? This is the place where his father Isaac had worshipped God, and God had revealed himself to Isaac there. This is a special place for the family. And so the question is going to be, Jacob's going to raise a question. Is Egypt the promised land? No. And what do they know that God promised them? Land. Seed. What's the other thing? Blessing. He's about to leave the land. He could say, am I supposed to leave the land? I mean, I know my son is down there. I know everything's going to be taken care of when I get down there. But should we leave? In fact, that's going to be the question. Is it right for Jacob to leave the promised land and go to Egypt? Notice what happens. Verse 3. The verse 2, God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. He said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. Why? For I will make you a great nation there. Does that solve the problem? It does. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. I'm the God of Isaac. Make sure Jacob knows this is God. Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. Why? Because he had been afraid. Was this right? At this time, the nation consists of 70 people. When they come out, they'll come out with how many? 2 million. What does God say? I will. He said, I will make you a great nation there. Verse 4, I will go down with you to Egypt. And watch this next. I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will close your eyes. What does that mean? He's what? What does that mean? He's going to die. He's going to be with Joseph when he dies. Now, what does he know? God said, this is the land that I promised you. Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. I'm going to make a great nation there. And then I'm going to bring you back. See, because remember, that's the key. The key is you've got to stay ultimately in the land. It's the land that God gave to them. So it's really powerful. I am the God. And so we remember the three things: the land of Canaan, the seed is the nation of the Messiah, and the blessing of salvation to the whole world through the Jew or through the Jewish people. He said, if you can write some of that in if you want to, that's the land, the seed, the blessing, that's the covenant part. Verse 4 is, I will bring you up again. Being in Egypt is temporary for the nation of Israel. Now, how long did they stay down there? Huh? At least 400 years and maybe longer. You know, they begin to wonder if they would ever get back to the land. What happens? Joseph dies, and then a Pharaoh comes to power that does not know Joseph. And what did he do? He made them all slaves, and they were slaves for 400 years. I mean, if Jacob would be alive, he could say, wait a minute, where's that promise that we're going to be down there and then we're going to come back? Watch what's going to happen. And so he says, and Joseph will close your eyes. And then verse 8, he says, now, these are the names of the sons of Israel, Jacob and his sons who went to Egypt. And he says, Reuben, and then he starts listing all the names. Verses 8 and 9, he lists the names of the sons of Israel. We're not going to go over them, but you got to remember, where did they all come from? Let me erase this again. Where did the sons of Israel come from? Through who? Through four women. Who are they? Rachel? Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah. There they are. And think about this. The nation of Israel, the Jewish people through which the Messiah came from Rachel, Leah, and two servant girls. It doesn't even add up in our minds. And when you start thinking about God's plan, think about who is in the lineage of Jesus Christ. There's a couple of harlots. There's a Moabite woman by the name of Ruth. I mean, think about that. There is, it's just all kinds of things. That's the sons of Israel. And so, if you go all the way down to verse 26, 27, because we're not going to name all the names, he says, and the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt, verse 26, all the people belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66 persons in all, and the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were two. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came to Egypt were, how many? 70 people. That's the nation of Israel? Actually, it's a family, right? It started with who? Abraham and Sarah, and then Isaac and Rebecca, and then Jacob and those four women and 12 boys. And now there's 70 of them. And when they come out of Egypt, they're a nation of at least 2 million people. That's why they didn't get the law till they came out of Egypt, because they're just a family. When they come out of Egypt, they're a nation. They have to have a law. They have to know how to live as a people group. Well, watch what happens. Verses 28 and 29. Now, he had sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out the way to him to Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. Joseph had prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck a long time. Oh, I love that. 22 years. All this time, Jacob thought Joseph was dead. And he didn't know that God was raising Joseph up. And sometimes in our lives, there are all kind of things happen, and we say, what's this mean? How's this going to work? What's going to happen here? And then you look back and you go, God was working in the whole thing. Everything worked out better than you could imagine, and he always does that. And it's just amazing what he does. And sometimes things look bad, and they turn out for good. And sometimes there's things, and you say, I don't understand this. And then later you can look back and go, now I see why God didn't do that, or why I didn't get that, or why this worked out this way. You could ask a question. You could say, why did it take 22 years? Well, there wasn't a famine. There wasn't a famine. Let's say this in a nice way. Would Jacob have left the promised land to go into Egypt if there wasn't a famine? I don't know. What if Joseph did die? What, I mean, we don't know. We just don't know what happened. So they went there, and verse 28 says, he sent Judah out there to show them the way. So they're coming to show the way, and then there was the reunion, and I love that. He wept on his neck for a long time. And so then Israel said to Joseph, let me die, since I've seen your face, that you're still alive. He said, let me die. And so it went to they went to Joseph, the land of Goshen. They laid the way to come down there. This is going to be big. And so they're going to go. And they got to tell Pharaoh. So look at verse 31. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh. And we'll say to him, think about this, y'all. You understand that Pharaoh just didn't talk to anybody. You just couldn't say, hey, I'll go up and see Pharaoh. I mean, but Joseph could. Joseph could talk to anybody. Pharaoh listened to Joseph. Pharaoh had already told Joseph when he found out that your family is, go get your family, bring them here, and bring them to the best part of the land of Egypt. They didn't just go to the land of Egypt. They went to the very best part of the land of Egypt. So it says, Joseph said to his brothers, verse 31, to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and will say to him, my brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come to me, and the men are shepherds, that they are keepers of the livestock, and they brought their flocks and herds and all that. And so he said, I'm going to go tell Pharaoh that you're here. And so this is going to be fantastic. And you know, it would be. Let's put yourself in Joseph's position. He could say, I can't believe my brothers did that to me. I can't believe that Potiphar's wife did that to me. I can't believe that those guys, when I told the thing, they didn't tell to get me out when I told their dreams. It took 2 years for the guy to remember. And then he said, now my dad is here after 22 years. Then put yourself in the brother's place. How are we going to really explain? What if he tells dad that they tried to kill me, or they sent me off and sold me into slavery? How's that going to make us look? Because we went and told dad that we thought an animal ate him up. And then what about Jacob? 22 years without seeing your son, thinking all that time he's dead. So look at chapter 47. And Joseph went in and told Pharaoh and said, my father and my brothers and their flocks and their herds and all that they have come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they're in the land of Goshen. He took 5 men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. So he goes, and I'll put that up there again. Okay, he's seen, that's the reunion. Now, chapter 47, first Joseph brings in his brothers. Now, how many other brothers did he bring in? 5. How many are there? Okay, who got picked, you think? I got a feeling I know one that probably got picked. Who do you think that was? Probably Benjamin. It doesn't say at all. And he says, he came in and he brought 5 of his brothers and presented them. And of course, Pharaoh's going to ask them and stuff like that. Look at verse 5. Pharaoh said to Joseph, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your what? You could just give it to them. It's wherever y'all want to go. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen. And if you know any capable men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. Give them good jobs. Give them good responsibilities. They've come into the land. This land is yours. They may live anywhere they want. Let me ask you something. There's a famine going on, right? What's the average person in Egypt doing? They're starving. And it's going to get so bad that every one of them are going to have to come and they're going to have to buy grain from Pharaoh because they've saved it for those years. And then eventually they're going to run out of money. So then they have to come and they bring their livestock, and their livestock belongs to Pharaoh. And then they're going to run out of that, and they're going to have to come up and say to Pharaoh, "We're your slaves. We give you our lives." And they set it down and say, "Okay, here's what's going to happen then. You can go back and have your little land, but Pharaoh gets a portion of everything you do." I mean, he's going to take over everything. And what the people say is what? "Thank you. Thank you." Who should they thank? Joseph. Yeah. So, look at the blessing. Goshen, if they want to live there, it's the best of the land. Look at the blessing. God has raised up Joseph in the nation. He has favor with Pharaoh. They brought the entire family to Egypt for protection and provision. He's given them the best land, and he will use them. That's amazing. If you notice today, in our cities and in our Ivy League colleges, that there are great protests against who? Against the Jewish people. They're pro-Palestinian. Why? Who started the war? Who raped and killed children and women? Who is the aggressor? But who's being persecuted? They're already having to take Jewish students from Columbia. They're removing them from the campus because people are going to try to hurt them. That's in our finest institutions, if you want to call it that. I love this next one. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh. Now watch. Who's top dog here? Pharaoh. Pharaoh is a god. And Pharaoh is the king of Egypt. And who is Jacob? He's just a little old man, right? But notice what happens. Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Who's doing the blessing? Who thinks they're the best? Jacob goes, "Yeah, I'm here. Bless you, Pharaoh. Bless you. I'm here to help you out, Pharaoh." The contrast the lowly old man before the mighty ruler. And so Jacob, what did Jacob do? Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Realize one is a child of God and the other is a child of the world. And can you imagine? And look at verse 9. I love it. Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many years have you lived? You look old." You look old, man. Yeah. So Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The years of my sojourn are 100 and how long? 30. You think he's about to die? Do you know how old he lives to? Do y'all know how long? You can look it up. It's about 147, something like that. Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The years of my sojourn are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life." What did he say? I ain't had that many good years. Really, I'm 130 something, but most of my life's been pretty bad. Why? Let me ask you this. Why? He's a deceiver. Most of his life he tricked everybody, and he got tricked back, and he got all this mess and everything else, and he had four wives. That's enough to kill anybody. And so he says, think about all that's going on in his life, and he lost his son, and he's had arguments with everybody else, and he thinks they're all starving to death. And when Pharaoh says, "How long have you lived?" He says, "I've lived 130 years, and most of it's been pretty bad." You know, and we could say, no, it's not been bad. You've been chosen by God. You know what we're going to show? We're going to show how many times God spoke to Jacob. Has God spoke to you? Has he come to you and spoke to you? He never spoke to me. He spoke to me in the Word. And I've had people say, "God spoke to me." I said, "How did he do it?" I don't know. Well, what did he look like? He looked just like Jesus. What did Jesus look like? I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, so he says, "The years have been unpleasant. I mean, nor they obtained the years of my father." How old was Abraham and Isaac? They were older. Jacob, I love this. Jacob blessed Pharaoh, verse 10, and went out from his presence. I mean, here's the guy, you know, that's nothing. And so the answer is 130 years. Look at this. Tell about his life. It's a bad life. No, he got to marry Rachel, which is the woman he loved. He got his name changed to Israel, Prince of God, defender, basically, the victor of God. He's the father of the nation of Israel. He has 12 sons. It's a great nation. 8 times God directly appeared to him. And he's had a bad life. Look at this. He lived to see his family united, lived in the best land of Egypt, had provision and protection during the great famine. Is that a bad life or a good life? What do you think? It's one of the great lives. Man. So how do you measure a life? Halverson said, how do you measure a life? I want you to think about it for just a second. Look at this. Is it how long you live? No, Methuselah lived, it was 969 years. Well, do we know anything about him? He's the oldest man in the Bible. So years, is it years that's important? No. How about influence? Alexander the Great conquered the whole world and drank himself to death, right? Or how about popularity? Movie stars, they have it all and yet they're totally empty. I mean, you read everywhere about these movie stars that says, my life is empty. There's just nothing there. Halverson said, life is measured by relationship with the living God. By the way, Jacob had a relationship with the living God. Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. That's the patriarchs. Joseph, we're putting him in there. But God is called the God of Jacob more than any other title in the Bible. He is the God of Jacob. Jeremiah 9 says, don't boast in power, money, or wisdom, but boast that you know God. That's the key. So verses 11 and 12, so Joseph settled his father and his brothers, and he gave them the possession of the land of Egypt in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had ordered. Joseph provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to their little ones. They got the best of the land. Pharaoh gave the Jews the best of the land. And so as we finish out that chapter, and there's just a whole bunch more in there, but look down at verse 27. Now Israel lived in the land of Egypt in Goshen, and they acquired property in it, were fruitful, and became very numerous. They start having more and more kids, more and more everything. And before you know it, there are going to be more and more of them. Now, we're going to see something that's unique, and this is I call it the blessing. This is where Jacob thinks he's about to die. And he wants to bless Joseph's sons. How many sons does he have? What's their names? Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, I want to show you something that's going to be unique. But as we start this chapter, the blessing, I want you to look at this. Look at Jacob's life. God appeared to him 8 times. Whoops, what happened there? Oh. God appeared to him 8 times. The covenant was promised to him. The nation is named after him. He's called the God of Jacob, more than any other title. His sons formed the 12 tribes of the nation. And he promised, God promised that he would become a great nation. Is that a great life? Think about it, y'all. Think about a great life. God appeared to him 8 times. He got the covenant promise of the land, the seed, the blessing. The whole nation of Israel is named after him. When we say Israelites, that's his name. He could say, that's my name. That's the name God gave me. And so look what happens. Chapter 48, verse 1. It came about after these things that Joseph was told, your father's sick. Oh no, what does that mean? You're over 130. If you get sick, what does that usually mean? You're probably not going to do that great, right? So he heard that his father was sick, so he took his 2 sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with him. Why? What's the plan? What's he going to do? He wants his father to bless his sons. You know that's the big deal. We've already seen it, how Abraham had 2 sons. Who were they? Isaac and Ishmael. And he ended up, the blessing actually went to Isaac. And then Isaac has, Jacob and Esau, and the blessing goes, So you just go down this thing. And so now Joseph says, I got two boys, and my daddy's alive, and I want him to bless them. And so he hears that he's sick, so he takes his two sons. It was told Jacob, behold, your son Joseph has come to you. So Israel collected his strength and sat up in the bed. He's sick enough that he can't sit up. And so they said, your son is here. And so he sits up in the bed so he can talk about what's going on. Jacob appeared to Joseph. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he told me, behold, I will make you fruitful and numerous, and I'll make you a company of peoples, and will give this land to your descendants after you for an everlasting possession. Now let me ask you something. Does Jacob know that God is going to take the nation back and give them that land and make them a great nation? Yes or no? Yes. Hey, listen, you think that these people didn't know what's going on? Jacob says, I know exactly what's going on. God promised to Abraham. He promised to Isaac. He promised it to me, says Jacob. And I guarantee you this is going to happen. And the reason he's saying that, because he's going to do something with these two boys. Now think about it. How many boys were there? There are 12, okay? And then Joseph has two sons. But when they divide the land up, one of the tribes didn't get land. Who is that? Levi. But do you realize the land was divided into 12 parts? That means there were 13. Where did the other one come from? Well, Joseph, you don't hear the tribe of Joseph. You hear Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And Joseph's two sons become equal with the other boys. And he's going to do that right here. Watch what he says. Verse 5, now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. He said, they're my sons. What? Yeah, they're my sons. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine as Reuben and Simeon. He says, your two sons have become my sons, and they're going to be equal with your sons. And that's why when you start naming the tribes of Israel, you don't say the tribe of Joseph. What do you say? Ephraim and Manasseh. So in this, there's going to be something that is so weird. They're going to change it. Joseph comes to Jacob. It's from the blessing. And he's going to take Joseph's two sons, and he says that they're mine. They're mine. What did Jacob say about even, they're my sons. They're the same as Reuben and Simeon. Wow. So this is amazing. And so he's going to give the prophecy, which is the passing on of the faith and the things that we're going to see. And so look what happens. Look at verse 8. When Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, who are these? By the way, he can't say, right? Joseph said, these are my sons whom God has given me. He said, bring them to me, please, that I may bless them. Now, the eyes of Israel were so dim from age that he could not see. So Joseph brought them close, and he kissed them and embraced them. Can you see this old man and these boys? And he brings them up, and they say, he can't see us. Yeah, I know. And he's kissing them and hugging them and holding on to them. And he's really saying, these are my sons. Because Joseph, I'm giving you the double portion. That's what he's doing to Joseph. He's giving Joseph the double portion. Who usually got the double portion? Oldest son. Who's the oldest son? Reuben. So Reuben's not going to get it. Joseph's going to get it. And he's going to take the two boys, and Joseph's going to get the double portion. And basically from Joseph, there are two tribes that have land. Joseph gets the double portion. And so he says, these are my sons, and he couldn't see, so he blessed them. And look what he says here. He says, Israel said to Joseph, I never expected to see your face, and behold, God has let me see your children as well. I don't know about you, but I was 36 when I got married, and I wasn't sure I was going to ever get married. Now, I wanted to get married from the time I was like 18. I just always wanted to be married, and nothing ever really worked out. And I remember thinking, I may never get to be married, and I may never get to have kids. Not only did I get married, I have grandkids. And I can sometimes say, wow, I've lived long enough to see my kids and my grandkids. And what does he say? I never thought I would see your face, and now I've seen your kids. That's That's life. It's just so amazing. And so Joseph respects his father. Joseph took them from his knees, and he bowed his face to the ground. And Joseph took both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right, and brought them close. So here he goes, and here's Jacob, and he's got his right hand out, and he's got Manasseh coming there, and he's got Ephraim on the left. And see, the right hand is the big blessing. So you got two boys, and the right hand is going to get the blessing. And why? So Ephraim, the left hand, he's the youngest. Manasseh, the right hand, he's the oldest. And so he's going to bless him, and he's saying, yeah, bless the oldest one. He gets the first blessing. Remember, the oldest son gets the what? He gets all the blessing. But look what happens, verse 14. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, crossing his hands, although Manasseh was firstborn. Look what he did. He went. Joseph sees this and he goes, oh my gracious, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And so what did Jacob do? He crossed the hands and put his right hand on Ephraim, youngest, and left hand on Manasseh, who's the oldest. And of course, what does Joseph think? Oh, poor dad. He can't even see. He doesn't even know what he's doing. And he starts blessing him. That's verse 15. Verse 17, when Joseph saw his father laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him. Why? Who's supposed to get the blessing? Firstborn. And he grasped his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. He's doing this. He said, "No, Daddy, no, whoa, we got it mixed. You got it mixed up. Daddy, you got it mixed up." Joseph said to his father, No, my father, this one is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head." Wow. I think he figured that my daddy can't see. He's so old, he doesn't know what he's doing. But notice, Manasseh's great, but Ephraim is younger, but will be greater. Here's what he says. Look what he says. His father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. I'm not stupid," is what he said. "I know. He will also be great people, and he will be great. However, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations." And he blessed them that day. Wow. He blessed the boys. And what he did is he took them, and you've got Reuben, Levi, Simeon, Judah, Asher, got all these boys, and you got Joseph there. And suddenly now Joseph has Ephraim and Manasseh, and they're counted as these right here. And so now there's 13 total, and 12 of them get land, and one, Levi, doesn't get land because they're going to be the priest. And so if you've ever wondered, if you weren't thinking and you said, well, there were 12 sons and the tribe of Levi didn't get land, so that must have been divided into 11 sections. No, it's divided into 12 sections because Ephraim and Manasseh are counted as the sons of Jacob. Wow. All right there. All happened right there. So finally, we're going to do in Sunday school, or we call it Grow Group. When we look in Grow Group, we're going to do, after we finish John the Baptist, we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 11, the Hall of Fame of Faith. And one of the acts of faith is Jacob blessing these boys. And we're going to see by faith what happened. It's Hebrews 11:21, an act of faith. Jacob passed on the blessing to the two boys, seeing the future. The double portion goes to Joseph. Wow. Wow, so now we're all the way over to chapter 49, and we're seeing all of these things. And I mean, to me, it's so amazing because I'm seeing all this happening, and I'm thinking, what's going to happen now? I mean, they've come to Egypt, they've got it made. Joseph is in power. Everybody's got the best land. Joseph has just brought his sons, and Jacob basically says, your two sons are going to be my sons. So now I have 13 sons. And, I mean, that's what's going to happen, because no more you don't hear of the tribe of what? Joseph, right? Have you thought about that you don't ever hear him say, tribe of Joseph? No, it's Ephraim and Manasseh. Well, watch what happens, chapter 49. Jacob summoned his sons and said, assemble yourselves that I may tell you what's going to befall you in the days to come. Okay, now he's getting close to dying, so he decides that he will tell them the future. The prophecies concerning the sons, the future events both near and far. He's going to bring all the boys up. Now listen, we're not going to take the time to go through every one of this, but he's going to take every one of these boys, he's going to bring them up, and he's going to say something about each one of them which deals with the prophecy of the future. Some of them he says 3 or 4 or 5 verses. Some of them he just says just a few words. You know, you could almost say, well, he didn't tell me hardly anything. And some of the things that he says, you know what you say? What does that mean? Right? It just doesn't. So what we're going to do is we're only going to look at two of them. One is Judah, and the other is Joseph. And Judah is dealt with, we'll deal with him first. And look what he says. If you go to chapter 49, look at verse 8. This is when he talks about Judah. Judah, your brother shall praise you. Whoa, what does Judah mean? Praise? You remember when they named him? Judah, your brother shall praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He crouches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares rouse him? So he says, Judah, we're going to praise you. There's going to be victory and strength and rule from Judah. I mean, Judah is going to have all of that. I've got that in your book for you. You don't have to put that in there. And he's called the praise. He calls him praise. The name Judah means praise. The others are going to look to him. But look, notice what it goes on to say. And this is unusual. Verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Now, we got to stop and look at that verse. Now, Judah is described as a lion. Have you ever heard of the lion out of the tribe of Judah? Well, it means the rule. But here's what I want you to see, verse 10. What is the prophecy? Does anybody know what this means? The scepter, the rod, the rule of the king shall come through Judah. What does that mean? Okay, that means what? The Messiah. The Messiah is the king of the Jews. The Messiah is the savior of the world. The Messiah is the seed of woman who crushes the head of the serpent. The Messiah is the seed of Abraham, in which all the nations of the world will be blessed. The Messiah is the son of David, who will be the king of kings and the Lord of lords. So when he says this Messiah is the king of the Jews, he said, through you, Judah, what's going to happen? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. What does that mean? That the king and the Messiah is going to come through which brother? Huh? Jesus was born as a descendant of who? King David. And King David came through which tribe? Judah. So there is a prophecy in Genesis 49, before they ever anything big happens, that the Messiah is going to come through the tribe of Judah. That's why when you start studying the Bible and you look at all the prophecies all come true. The prophecies all come true. Now, he says, the scepter, the rod, the rule of the kingship will come through Judah. Now, look at the next part of the verse. The scepter shall not part from Judah, for the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes. What is Shiloh? Is it a who or a what? It was a name of a town. We see some of the passages referring to someone to whom all will obey. Notice what it says, until Shiloh come, and to him shall all be the obedience of all the peoples. Who is Shiloh? Who is it? It's Jesus. He has the idea of a peace and a safety and a ruler idea. That's Shiloh. That's why they named the city Shiloh. But he doesn't say until Shiloh comes like they're going to go to Shiloh. He says, no, there's a Shiloh coming. Have you thought about all the different ways that Jesus is referred to in the Old Testament? He's the prophet in Deuteronomy 18:15. He's Shiloh in Genesis 49. He's the son of David in 2 Samuel 7. He's the seed of woman. That's Genesis 3:15. He's all over the Bible. That's who he is. And there is a prophecy right here that the Messiah will come. And until Shiloh comes, Shiloh is the Hebrew. It has an idea of peace. It's referring, it comes, the idea of shalom comes from Shiloh. The Hebrew root is Pete, refers to the King Messiah, the Prince of Peace, the King of Kings, Jesus Christ. And what is Jesus called? He is called the Lion out of the tribe of Judah, the King Messiah. There is the prophecy. That's the first prophecy showing what tribe of the nation of Israel the Messiah is coming from. I want you to think about something. Abraham had two sons. What are they? Isaac and Ishmael. But the prophecy was going to come through who? Isaac. Isaac has two sons. They are Jacob and Esau. And the prophecy is coming through Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons. But where's the prophecy? Coming through who? Judah. God is narrowing it down all the way through the scripture. When Jesus came, if the people and the religious leaders were looking for the Messiah, they could have easily seen that Jesus fit everything perfectly. But they didn't want Jesus to be there. They did not want the Messiah to be there. They wanted to keep their positions of authority. That's why they said, if we don't do something, the Romans are going to come take our positions away. We've got to kill him. It's expedient for the nation that one man die instead of the nation of Israel. From there, we get Joseph. Look at verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, by a spring. Its branches run over a wall. Well, now, what does that mean? What does that mean? You tell me. What do y'all think it means? Nobody wants to say because nobody knows. But everybody goes, "What? A fruitful bough. What does that mean?" Joseph is a fruitful bough. He's like a branch or a sun. What? A fruitful bough by a spring. What does that tell you? What do you picture when you hear that? Some tree or something with a whole bunch of fruit on it by what? By water. Is that good or bad? That's good. They're saying he's going to be a blessing. I mean, he's going to be okay. Look what it goes on to say. The archers bitterly attacked him and shot at him and arrested him, but his bow remained firm. His arms were agile from the hands of the mighty one of Jacob. But there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel, from the God of your fathers who helps you, and by the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of heaven above, beneath the blessings that lie beneath. And so he just keeps going and saying, you're going to be blessed, you're going to be blessed, you're going to be a fruitful bough. He talks about that he's going to gain great victory. That's what verse 24 says. His bow remains agile and his arms were agile. I mean, listen, nothing can stop him. Nothing can stop Joseph is what he's saying. And, I mean, it's just amazing. He's going to have triumph. He's going to gain the victory. So that's the prophecy that for Joseph, and that's the prophecy for Judah. Now, there's a prophecy for every one of them. And if you wanted to take the time, he says, Reuben, you're my firstborn, my strength from the beginning. Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence. What? Because you went up to your father's bed. He said you had sex with one of my wives. And you lost your position. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. He talks about them. He talks about Judah. He talks about Zebulun. He says Zebulun will dwell at the seashore. Issachar is like a strong donkey. Dan will be like a serpent. I mean, he names all these names. And some of them it sort of makes sense, and some of them it doesn't make sense. We don't know how the prophecies all filled out. So he charged them, verse 29. Now watch this. Then he charged them. Now this is the key. He charged them and said to them, I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my father in the cave that is in the field of Ephron, the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of where? What is it? Machpelah, in which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephron, the Hittite, for the burial site. You remember Abraham didn't have any land and Sarah died. And what did he do? He went to Mamre and he went to those people and said, I need to get some land. And they sold him a field with a tree at the end and a cave. And that's where he buried Sarah. And then look what this next verse goes on to say. There they buried Abraham and his wife Sarah, and they buried Isaac and his wife Rebekah, and I buried Leah there. Okay, well, who's left out? Huh? What, Rachel? What happened to her? She died in childbirth. They were somewhere away, and they had to bury her somewhere else. She got left out of everything. You know, she did, poor thing. And so where's all the family buried? In the cave. And by the way, how much of the land do they own? That's the only part that they own. Who does it belong to? Who does the land belong to?
Israel.
It belongs to them. God said, Abraham, just look around. That's all your land. Isaac, look around. That's all your land. Jacob, this is all your land. And they could all say, how much do we own of it? None. When did they take the land? When did they get the land?
After Moses.
Anybody know anybody after Moses? Joshua. That's when they took the land. That's when they divided it up. That's when they got the land for the 2 million people that came out. So he says to them, listen, here's my request. Bury me in Canaan. Bury me in the field at the cave of Machpelah. That's where Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah and Leah, they're all buried there. I don't want to be buried here. You know what? He's saying, when the resurrection comes, where do I want to be? I want to be in the land. So watch what happens. Oh, Jacob, verse 33. Jacob finished charging his sons. He drew his feet into the bed. He breathed his last and was gathered to his people. He died. Do you know someday you're going to see him? You're going to see Moses. You're going to see Abraham and Isaac. You're going to see Rachel and Jacob. And you're going to see Joseph and Ephraim and Manasseh. And you're going to see Elijah and Elisha. You're going to see Jesus and Peter and James and John and Paul. You're going to see these people someday. They are alive. He is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's not the God who was the God of Abraham. They're alive right now. To be absent from the body is where? Present with the Lord. So when he dies, you know what? It says he was gathered to his people. And so what do they do? So let's get to Genesis 50 so we can finish quickly and open up for any questions. Joseph fell on his father's face, wept over and kissed him, and Joseph commanded the servants, the physicians, to embalm him. Who's going to embalm him? Who? Egyptians. Who's the best in the world at embalming? Egyptians. Now, 40 days were required for it. It took 40 days for such as the period required for embalming, and the Egyptians wept for him for how many days? 70 days. Do you know how many days they wept when a Pharaoh died? 72. Think about that. He was so accepted and expected. And so what did they do? Look what they did. Verse 13. Thus his sons did for him as he charged him. His sons carried him to the land of Canaan, buried him in the field, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham had bought, along with the field of the burial site from Ephron the Hittite. And after he buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who had gone up with him to bury his father. So when they died, Pharaoh said to him, we'll embalm the body, we'll do everything, and then you can go. And they took a whole bunch of Egyptians went. They took a whole bunch of Egyptians, and they all went and buried Jacob in the land. Wow. The nation wept. Now, forgiveness. You're one of the brothers. And so far, your daddy's been alive and everything's been okay. And Joseph has been nice to you. But now, daddy's dead. What's Joseph going to do now? Because is Joseph pretty powerful? He, besides Pharaoh, he's the most powerful man in Egypt. He can just say anything and do anything. And so, verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him? What if? What are we going to do? What was the brother's worry? Because the brother's dead. What if Joseph wants to get us back? What if all this time he is saying these pious things like, you've been here for you. But no, what if he actually says, well, now that dad is gone, we're going to even this thing up a little bit. So what did they do? So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father charged before he died, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression of your brothers for their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgressions of the servants of the God of your father. And now, what does that mean? Please forgive your brothers, right? Well, please forgive us. What'd they tell Joseph? Father told us to tell you, please forgive us. What does that mean? Was it true? Did they actually tell Jacob the truth and said, we lied to you, Daddy, and we thought we threw him in the thing and then sold him off, and he became powerful and everything. So be sure and tell him not to get us back. Or did they just make this up to save their own skin and say, let's just tell him Dad said, please forgive him. And so look what happens. The brothers came in, and they fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. Guess what? This is the sixth time the fulfillment of the dream that the brothers bowed down. Sixth time. Wow. So from Joseph, we're going to see three things dealing with forgiveness. And I think this is really important. So look at what they are. The first one is this. The three keys to forgiveness of Joseph and his brothers. The first is, don't be afraid. Am I in God's place? No. Look what he says. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. For am I in God's place? He said, am I in God's place? I'm not the ultimate judge. When people do wrong, who gets people back? God does. God, vengeance belongs to the Lord, not to us. Romans 14, never return evil with evil, return evil with good. Vengeance belongs to the Lord. Joseph is saying, I'm not God. I'm not going to get you back. That's not my place. And you have to recognize, y'all, when people do you wrong or you perceive that they do you wrong, you don't get them back. That it belongs to the Lord. The second thing, I love the second one. You meant it for evil and God meant it for good. God is sovereign. Look what he says. Verse 20. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order. Why? To bring about the present results, to preserve many people alive. He says, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. God is sovereign. He works everything out for his own perfect will. And this is to save the people, the nation. And then he gives the third thing, that return good for evil. Joseph will do good to them. Look what he says. Therefore, don't be afraid. Verse 21, I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Here is a man that had at his disposal to do anything to his brothers that he wanted to do. And what did he say? I'm not God. I'm not going to get vengeance. You meant it for evil, God meant it for good, he's in control, and I'm going to do good for you. What does the Bible say? Never return evil with evil, return evil with good, always. Wow. There's a fourth thing I wanted to say, too, about this is, whoops, I don't guess I have it as a slide. I don't know, I thought I did, but I guess I didn't. Yep, okay. The fourth one is here, so it the keys to forgive. God is the judge, not us. God is sovereignly working. Repay evil with good. And then Ephesians says, forgive others as we're forgiven in Christ. We forgive others as we're forgiven in Christ. Let me give you a time to write those four things down if you want to. I think they're powerful. You've already got three of them in those three things, but I added the fourth one. But that just sort of puts it together. It's so easy for us to want to judge other people and think how wrong they are and how bad they are, what they've done. You know, we want to say, oh, they did this and that. You know, we're not God. It's not our place. Second is God is sovereign. He works all things. And God put him into Egypt at exactly the right time, and he did it ever how he chose to do it. It's amazing. And then he says, I'm going to repay evil with good. I'm going to do good for you guys all the rest of your life. And then I always just throw that one in there. Just remember, forgive others as God has forgiven us. So let's get to the last part. And if we get through just a little bit early, we can open up for any questions or whatever you want to do. But look at this right here. So here it is, the death. And this is the death of Joseph. And how old was Joseph when he died? He was 110 years old. How old was he when he came to Egypt? He was 17. He lived in the promised land for 17 years and lived in Egypt all the way till he was 110. Wow. So look what it says here, verse 22. Now Joseph stayed in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived to 110 years. Joseph saw his third generation of Ephraim's sons, also the sons of Machir, the sons of Manasseh, were born on Joseph's knees. Joseph saw it all. He saw it all. He not only lived to have his children, he saw his children's children as well, and he lived there, and then he's going to give a request. What was Joseph's request? Take my bones with you. He wanted to be resurrected in the promised land. Look what he says. Joseph said to his brothers, verse 24, I'm about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the land which he promises an oath to who? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Who are they? They're the patriarchs. He said, I'm going to die, but God's going to take the nation and take them back to the what? To the land. The land promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He said, I do not want to be in Egypt when the resurrection comes. I want to be in the promised land. So what I want you to do is take my bones. When you leave, does he have any idea when they're leaving? Did anybody get it? What was Joseph's request? Take my bones with you. He wanted to be resurrected in the promised land. Take my bones. And so look what happened. Verse 26. Y'all ready? Do you need to write some more? Are y'all okay? Okay. They put him in a coffin. Verse 26. And Joseph made the sons of swear, God will take care of you. Take my bones out. So Joseph died at the age of 110 years, and he was embalmed by Egypt and placed in a coffin in Egypt. So, listen, Joseph is famous in Egypt. I guarantee you everybody knows where that coffin is. And the Jewish people know where that coffin is. And guess what happens? Guess what happens? Look at this right here. As they're leaving, after all of the plagues, the death of the firstborn, they're leaving. It says, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God shall surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones from here with you. When they came out at Passover and came out of Egypt, they took Joseph's bones with them, because that was the promise. Now, so Moses is faithful to do it. Moses is faithful to carry the request of Joseph. Think, how long had that been, y'all? Maybe 400 years. People didn't forget. You know, as the new generation came along, they kept saying, once we ever get out of here, take Joseph's bones. That's what we promised him. So look what happened. They came in, but we said it a while ago, who conquered the land? Joshua, watch this. Now they buried the bones of Joseph, which the sons of Israel brought up from Egypt at Shechem, in a piece of the ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the son of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money, and they became the inheritance of Joseph's sons. They didn't bury him until they had conquered most of the land. So what have we seen? Four great people. What happened? Oh, whoo. What do I need to hit?
Slide show from current.
Play from current slide.
Hey.
Whew. Thank you very much. Okay. Four great people. Abraham. Listen, y'all, you're going to see him. You're going to see Abraham. Chosen by God to leave his home and go to Canaan, a man of faith. In fact, you're called a son of Abraham, a child of Abraham. Every one of us in this room are called children of Abraham because Abraham was a man of faith, and everybody who are people of faith who have believed God are called the children of Abraham. So every one of us in this room are children. That doesn't mean we're Jewish. It means that he was a man of faith, we're people of faith. The second thing is Isaac is the gentleman who trusted God. And I have to say that he gets left out. That's why we call him the quiet man. But he was willing to die and trust God and believed that he would be raised from the dead. Would you be willing to do that? He did. Jacob, I call him the powerful man. A deceiver and being deceived, who became Israel, the Prince of God. The one that saw God 8 times. The one that is called the God, that God is called the God of Jacob more than anyone else. There he is. And then last but not least, we got Joseph. We call him the holy man because he served God in everything he did. He was faithful in prison. He was faithful in everything that he did. Whatever God had for him to do, he was faithful. And so as we think about the patriarchs, I've got some applications just for us to look at, and then we'll have a few minutes to raise any questions or talk about anything we want to talk about, or just eat the cookies, whatever we want to do. Here's the truth. First of all, we have to trust God in the events of our lives. He is the sovereign one in control and working all events. And just like what happened in Abraham's life, and Isaac's life, and Jacob's life, and Joseph's life, all of those events, God was working all those things to bring a man named Abraham from the Ur of the Chaldees to marry him and Sarah, and to have the family, and to have Isaac, and then Isaac to go all the way back and get the you know, Rebecca and all of that, and then for them to have sons. And then, I mean, it's just amazing what God was doing, protecting and preserving. And the whole point of all of this is from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob to Judah, Joseph, to Judah, to David, all the way down to Jesus, the Messiah. And people say, I hate Jewish people. I say, I love Jewish people. Jewish people gave us the Word of God, and Jewish people gave us the Messiah. That's what God's plan was. That's what God's plan is. And there's going to come a day when the Jewish people will believe in Jesus Christ as the Messiah and the Savior, and when they call upon the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, is going to come set up the kingdom. You'll never have a kingdom until the nation of Israel believes in Jesus as Messiah. And it's going to happen. That happens during the tribulation. The second thing is, let's tell others God's plan of salvation for mankind. We started with Abraham, and Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. Same thing for Isaac, the same thing for Jacob, the same thing for Joseph. All the way through, salvation is always the same. Always the same. I pray that as a church, we will be faithful in this community to tell people that salvation is a gift by faith in Jesus Christ. You believe in him and you get what? Eternal life. Jesus, believe, life. Just remember, that's John 3:16. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, Jesus, that whosoever would believe would never perish but have eternal life. That's the key. And then here's the third one. Forgive one another. Everybody hurts everybody. You get close enough to a person, you're going to get hurt. That's just life, whether they're married to them or your friend or your whatever. People are going to hurt each other. That's just what life is. And what do? You forgive them or do you hold a grudge? Do you get vengeance or do you forgive? You've got to forgive or else you will be the one who will be destroyed. People who do not forgive other people, they're the ones that get destroyed because forgiveness leads to bitterness. Bitterness leads to depression. That's what happens. Forgive one another. What did Joseph do? He had the chance to do anything he wanted to do, and he said, I'm not God. I'll forgive you, and I will bless you. God's going to take evil and make it good, and that's what he does. So there they are, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph.